I get older, losing my hair, many years from now, will you still be sending me a valentine, birthday greetings, bottle of wine? If I'd been out till 3:15, would you lock the door? Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
It's Monday, November 1st, 2004, and welcome to today's show. This is Dr. Rob Stahl with What Should You Expect at Your Age? Remember, you should answer that question, I should expect and deserve a lot at my age. Don't settle for less. Last week we talked about general safety issues with Patty Ann Gazinski, a volunteer with the Erie County Department of Emergency Services, and Kitty Sullivan, representing Lifeline Systems. I have with me today Dr. Fred Portum, a doctor of physical therapy who directs rehab services at WellCare, a local home care agency, and Bob White, a martial arts instructor at Damon College and Niagara County Community College, a karate black belt, and a Tai Chi expert. Today we'll talk about balance and fall prevention, what causes balance problems, what predisposes older people to falls, and what can be done to prevent them. The phone number for your calls is 855-6848, and we're all here to answer your questions. Welcome, Fred. Welcome, Bob. You could say hi, guys.
Hello.
Thank you, Doctor.
Can you tell us a little bit about your professional backgrounds and your current responsibilities? We could start with you, Fred.
I'm a physical therapist. I've been a physical therapist for a few years, and majority of my career I've been treating geriatric patients, elderly patients in the home, and that's pretty much how I got started looking at falls and examining them more closely. I finished my doctoral degree in physical therapy not too long ago, and I did some research on falls, and I'm sure we're going to be talking about the statistics a little bit later, but the amount of people falling out there was really surprising to me, so I put together a little program to see if we can't reduce that a little bit in the population.
Now, the doctoral degree, you had to do a thesis for that, and was that in falls or something else?
It wasn't a thesis so much as looking at current evidence and research. A lot of times, I think, as a physical therapist, a lot of times we tended to do things just because we thought that they worked in the future or in the past. And the current realm that physical therapy is going, I think we're really starting to look more at evidence and looking at research and seeing are the things that we're doing truly making a difference. And if they are, we should be doing those instead of just kind of flying by the proverbial seat of our pants.
Right. And that goes along with the whole movement of evidence-based medicine, actually having some basis to the things all of us healthcare professionals do.
Exactly.
And you, Bob?
I've been teaching Tai Chi and karate full-time in Western New York since 1996. And given the age of the population here in this part of the country, Tai Chi has been a very popular program for me. A study done in Atlanta in 96, coincidentally, found that Tai Chi can improve balance by 47.5%. It was conducted on persons over age 70. So I think it's relevant for me to be here talking about balance. It's a fun, productive way to improve balance.
Well, that's why I'm glad you could make it. And how many people do you think you've taught over your career? Let's say older people, Tai Chi.
The majority of my students, probably 80% of my student population is 50 and older. And on a busy week, I have 200 students. And that's been going on pretty steady since 96. Tai Chi is very popular as people become more aware of its benefits.
Well, we'll talk more about the specifics as we go along. Now, as a physical therapist, Fred, you mentioned that part of your training, a good part of your training, was dealing with older people. Did you have a specific interest in falls or a personal interest? Are there any personal experiences that moved you towards doing what you're doing?
Well, my grandmother had two falls, which resulted in two new hips. And I know that was a trying experience. I did some work in subacute rehab, and a lot of those patients that we were seeing were total hip replacements, a lot of them as a result of falls. And I wish I could come here and say that we're going to eliminate falls, and if we do this, 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 and this, people won't fall again. But there are so many, I can't do that. There are so many reasons that people are falling, and a lot of them can be eliminated.
All right, and that's what we're here for. If we can decrease even by 10% the number of falls, we'll be doing something good for the population and preventing a lot of suffering. Falls do cause a tremendous amount of suffering. And Bob, anything personal, any personal experiences that got you into even martial arts? And I don't know if you were in New York City and got mugged, and that's why you went into martial arts. But
no, when I was a kid, it was all Bruce Lee and the what do they call them, Chop Suey movies, so that always caught my interest.
Kung Fu, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the afternoon and late evening movies. I've always been interested in it. But when you really reach a certain level in your own training, you see how productive it is in fitness and health, well-being, mental well-being. And if you ask people that have taken Tai Chi, their confidence levels increase. Not only have they physically improved their ability to balance, they feel more confident about balance. So I've noticed that. Someone will be in my class for about 4 weeks and say, I feel stronger. I feel like I can balance better.
And just to piggyback on that, in my research, one of the things that I found is that people who are afraid of falling are so much more at risk of actually having a fall. So participating in something like this, if you can increase your confidence and decrease your fear of falling, you're going to be up and about more often and not have that fear in the back of your mind, and you would think that you would actually decrease your risk of falling if you're not afraid.
I was going to add later on the show, but I might as well talk about it now, that there's a vicious cycle of falls and fear of falling, and that occurs when someone falls. Let's say they're fine, they don't have a permanent injury, but then they develop the fear of falling. Mm-hmm. And that fear of falling keeps them from going out, walking, exercising, which then predisposes them even more to falling when they do get up and go. And so you have this vicious cycle where, people are afraid, they don't exercise, they don't do the things they need to keep their bodies in shape to prevent falls, and that makes them more liable to fall.
Right, even if they haven't had necessarily a hospitalization, but they just had a fall and, were bruised and sore for a while, they think to themselves, well, I sure as heck don't want to do that again. So they sit on the couch and think that if I'm sitting here, I won't fall, which is true. However, you have to appreciate the whole time that you're sitting down on that couch, you're not moving around, you're decreasing your endurance, you're decreasing your strength, you're decreasing your cardiovascular status, the feedback you're getting from your joints and neurologic capability. So if you sit for too long and you just, have no activity, your body breaks down. It's that efficient. Use it or lose it.
Bob, you mentioned the 47.5% decrease in the number of falls from Tai Chi programs. Let me go into a few more statistics, and please chime in with other numbers to put things in perspective. There's an article from the Journal of the American Geriatric Society, and it's called Guideline for the Prevention of Falls in Older Persons. And this was published in 2001. And it states that in the age 65 and over population as a whole, approximately 35 to 40% of community-dwelling, generally healthy older persons fall annually. Wow. After age 75, the rates are higher. And that approximately 5% of older people who fall require hospitalizations. Now, to me, that's an epidemic, I think.
Right, I was definitely alarmed when I came up with that number myself. And not only that, those 1 in 3 people who fall, or over the age of 65, fall each year, 2/3 of those people fall again, statistically, within 6 months. For your listeners, if you've had a fall, that might be a good time to call your physician and let him or her know and say, maybe something's going wrong. Maybe, you want to send me to physical therapy or come in to do an assessment to see if it's a medication or a physical type of issue that may be going on with you.
And we'll get into some things that you'll be able to contact me or contact my guest today,
self-assessment forms that you can do and places you can go if you feel uncomfortable talking to your doctor about that, or if you feel your doctor really doesn't know what to do when someone falls, or really doesn't consider it part of aging. Sometimes that happens. It takes time to evaluate someone who falls, and a doctor may not have the time to do the proper job. So there are things you can do to help gather some information for the doctor to make it easier for the doc to do that proper job and make sure that everything's done to prevent that very common second fall. Also, another statistic, approximately 10% of falls, there were 5% that resulted in hospitalization, and 10% result in serious injury, such as hip fracture, subdural hematoma, hitting your head and having blood collect around your brain, or other soft tissue or head injuries. And approximately 95% of hip fractures that occur in the elderly are caused by falls. So we do have an epidemic here, and there's a lot of aspects to be considered. There's the patient, what the patient can do for themselves, what caregivers, people living with the patient, might be able to do to help the patient prevent falls. And then there's the healthcare professionals that are out there available that people may or may not know are out there to also help. So let's get into, we know why preventing falls is so important, and because of these numbers and the tremendous impact on someone's health, and often falls are a major, repeated falls are a major reason also for why people end up in nursing homes or other long-term care facilities. So, you know, if you want to stay independent in your home, in your current situation, it's something you really have to pay very close attention to. Now, the injuries caused by falls, Fred, why don't you just go through those again, and Bob, you can chime in. What kind of things do you see happening when someone falls?
Well, there's a whole number of things that happen to people as a result of their fall. Best case scenario is you fall, you dust yourself off, and you're able to get up and around again. However, like we talked about a little bit earlier in the show, you still have that fear of falling that's starting to creep into the back of your mind. And then, just as you mentioned before, you have the potential of fracturing a hip, a knee, any extremity. If you hit your head, the possibility of getting a head injury is a lot greater. If you can even toss in, you know, embolisms and a whole bunch of bad outcomes that you can hit.
Scrapes. If you scrape your skin, you can get an infection.
I want to say a few years ago, wrist fractures were the leading emergency room visit, weren't they? Because so many kids were falling on roller blades.
Well, that's certainly for kids and also adults. You know, falling, putting your hands out to protect from the fall, and you break your wrist.
Right.
Which in martial arts we always say a broken wrist is better than a fractured skull or broken neck. So you do learn to take an impact on the arms as opposed to falling on your head. But that is a specific application to fighting art, probably doesn't apply to everyday life.
Well, let's take the situation of people that are healthy, overall healthy, and let's say are on few medications and are generally out and about, living their lives, had no specific health worries, have never fallen before. What are some of the more common causes of falls in that sort of person?
You mentioned medications, and that's one of the biggies that when I'm out talking to senior groups, I really like to hit on. Medications are a huge cause of why people fall, and there's different extremes. There's the overuse of medications, the tendency of people to not take a medication if it doesn't make me feel different. You know, take a hypertensive medication. You know, if you take it, you feel fine. If you don't take it, you may not notice a difference. You may not get a headache or blurred vision or something like that. So some of the thinking of my patients was that, well, if I don't feel any different from taking it, why bother taking it? Why the extra expense and hassle? And I'm already taking 7 different medications, so why take it?
Another reason may be people can't afford the medication. So they don't take, they try to prioritize and take just what is needed. Or kind of piggybacking on that is skipping a dose. If you're supposed to take a medication three times a day, well, maybe I can just get away with, or I can stretch it out longer if I just take it twice a day.
So a person who feels healthy and is going along just fine may start playing around with their medications because they feel fine, and too much or too little of medication can cause certain symptoms. Now, Bob, I know you sent me a list, and this relates to the discussion last week. There's a lot of safety issues and home safety, environmental things that can predispose to falls. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Loose area rugs can be an issue. Clutter on the floor, keeping the place clean. A lot of times people lose their flexibility, their overall level of fitness. They don't want to pick things up off the floor. That's dangerous. Slippery floors, wet floors. Be cautious in public places. But if someone has an issue with medication, can their pharmacist help them, or do they have to go to the doctor?
Well, certainly, a good dialogue with the pharmacist is essential too, but often the situation is not conducive to talking with the pharmacist. If you're at one of the supermarkets, the food stores, and you're in a line, and you don't want to hold people up, they ask you, do you have any questions? And I think there's a certain embarrassment to say yes, so that's not really conducive to going through everything with your pharmacist. Yeah. And do you want? Go ahead.
I always advocate for my patients to, and doing your part to making your physician's job easier. We all know that physicians are under more pressure under managed care to see more people and things of that sort. So make it a little bit easier for him or her when you go to see your physician for a regular checkup. Take a list of all your medications and the dosages and ask him or her if they would like, if they want to take a look at them, and just to make sure that, a different physician didn't prescribe you something way back when that was only supposed to be used for short term, you're still using it. Hopefully they can pick up on that and get you off medications that you don't need, or put you on some that maybe you do need.
With regard to this show, fall prevention, I think it's essential that if you have a recent fall, that when you go in and pick up your medications or even make a special trip into the pharmacy and mention it to the pharmacist.
Yeah, I think
I had a fall, and could any of these medications be involved? And they might ask you what other things you might be taking, over-the-counter medications that could be adding to dizziness or lightheadedness when you stand up. There's a lot of medications that could do that. If you're on medications especially for anxiety, depression, those in particular are known to potentially predispose to falls.
You made another good point about over-the-counter medications. I find a lot of people don't often disclose the over-the-counter medications or the herbal supplements or all these other things that are out there because they don't consider it a medication. It's imperative that you let your doctor know that you are taking a glucosamine and chondroitin or a St. John's wort, any of those additional supplements, because those are medications and they can interact maybe with a medication that you're currently taking. So don't be embarrassed about them. Don't think that they're not important. They are important.
Go ahead. A number of students in my class take glucosamine chondroitin regularly. That can interact with medications.
Right, and it's not necessarily a dangerous medication, but you put it out on the table and make sure that it may, that it's not interacting.
Another thing people might not even think about, especially in the hot weather, if it ever gets hot in Buffalo, and it does get warm, is if you get dehydrated.
Yeah.
If you're a little bit down on your fluid, and older people don't always sense that they're down on fluid like a younger person might. Not having enough fluid in your body might add to that effect of when you stand up that you might get lightheaded.
Yeah.
So something as simple as having a good fluid balance in your body. And while we're on fluids, what about nutrition? What can you guys tell me about the importance of nutrition, good nutrition?
Young students of mine will. In fact, tonight I've got a rather strenuous cardiovascular workout for karate, and I always have to make sure that they maintain their blood sugar levels. These kids will come in without eating, work out for an hour and a half, and get lightheaded. Now, I'm very careful to monitor them, but maybe if they're working out unsupervised, it's something to think about. So I tell them you have to eat an hour before class, but they become hypoglycemic through the exertion. So I'm sure nutrition would play a part in the elderly. My aunt's shut in. She doesn't like to cook for herself. That's your biggest concern, is just getting her to eat.
Well, eating regularly, one, to prevent things like low blood sugar, and especially in people who are diabetic on medications. It's critical. And the other aspect of eating regularly, a good diet, is to keep your strength, to make sure your body's getting the nutrition it needs to maintain its strength. So nutrition, of course, plays into this, and that brings us into maintaining body strength, exercise. And what would you recommend for regular exercise to maintain an older body the way it should be, to be able to walk, to be able to walk steadily?
Right. But, you know, along with medications, that's the thing I always advocate to the people I speak to, is one of the best things that you can do to keep yourself up healthy and reduce that risk of falling is exercise, exercise, exercise. You know, it doesn't have to be, you know, a 10-mile run around the block. It doesn't have to be, you know, something that's going to take up a considerable amount of time that you really stresses your cardiovascular status. But you need to be doing something, whether it's doing small squats at the countertop or kind of doing toe raises, lifting your arms over your head. People say, well, that's not real exercise. Absolutely.
Well, let's stop right there. Now, we know there are mall walkers out there. I've seen them at the mall.
They're walking two before I get up, so I don't see them.
But how many are there compared to all the older people that are out there? Now, in Erie County, western New York, we have approximately 1 million people in the metropolitan area. And 16% of those are 65 and over. We're an older area compared to nationwide, where 12 to 13% are 65 and over. So we have approximately 160,000 people in this area that are 65 and over. Now, I don't see 160,000 people necessarily mall walking every morning.
Statistically, they say 20% of your overall population will join a health club or buy training equipment like a treadmill for their home.
Well,
that's not broken down by age, and they tell us that about 2% will join a martial arts academy and take either karate or tai chi. Probably about 20% of the overall population. It would be interesting to see what percentage of that is 65 and older.
Yeah, it would be more interesting is to find out the 20% who buy the equipment, what percentage actually use it.
Exactly.
That's right.
Exactly.
Now, you started talking about doing toe raises and things like that at home. So what can people do in the normal course of their day-to-day activities that would be exercise that someone might not even realize would help that they can do as they're doing something else?
Right. You don't have to get out to the mall and do, you know, five laps. You don't have to join a martial arts class. If it's a taxing effort for you to get out of the home, especially with winter and you're afraid of the ice and the snow, you can get a great exercise routine in your home. First thing, you know, a simple exercise, and again, granted that you're capable of doing this safely, you know, doing small mini squats, just bending, you know, your knees, holding on to the kitchen sink, going down a half a foot or so, coming back up. Doing toe raises.
How many times should they do that?
Maybe 20 of those, or until they tolerate.
20 a day total, so they can do five at one time and five at another.
Right.
Time.
Maybe after five you feel fatigued. You know, do five for a while, then maybe you'll notice that you can do six, seven, and then, you know, work it up to maybe, you know, 20 or so a day. You could do toe raises, just coming up on your tippy toes. Same thing. Maybe 20 of those. You can standing up, kick your leg out, or lift your leg out to your side. Marching in place. You kicking your legs out in front of you, lifting your arms up over your head. Anything that is causing you to do some movement, you may not feel it, but you're exercising your cardiovascular system, you're exercising your musculoskeletal system. You know, part of this, what we talk about so much with hip fractures, is people don't realize a lot of times that your bones are growing. Their growing cells are constantly regenerating themselves, and what causes them to regenerate themselves is that they feel that they are being used.
So by exercising, by walking, by doing squats, by doing toe raises, you're stimulating those bones to start making themselves stronger. So hopefully that you decrease the chance of
having a fracture. And it is well known that exercise is one thing to help maintain bone strength and decrease the development and progression of osteoporosis.
Right. You may be taking Fosamax. That's all well and good. Keep taking it. But you need to exercise those bones and make sure that your body keeps maintaining them and keeping them strong.
And for women especially, are you taking your calcium and vitamin D to provide the materials for the bones to keep building themselves?
I ask my students in the one credit class at Damon College, what does a London bus driver have to do with Tai Chi? And the answer is a study that was done, I believe, in 48, the London bus driver study, which is still relevant today. And in it, the effects of exercise were studied because there are two operators on a London bus. There's the conductor that goes up and down the stairs on a double-decker bus, and there's the driver that sits and drives all day. And at the end of the study, the results were that the conductor lives longer and has less chance of contracting most diseases than the driver because of activity. So that tells us that anything, walking, stair climbing, can affect our lifespan. Will live longer, we're less likely to contract type 2 diabetes, a wide variety of diseases. I think it was done in 48. But the advantage to group exercises like a health club or martial arts, also social, maybe people that are shut in get out, form social groups. Often in my class, people make new friends, go out for coffee afterwards. I'm sure physical therapy now, they get an opportunity to discuss with an expert. So when people can, walking is their best exercise. You can do a lot in your home. Just standing from a seated posture repeatedly, maybe 10 times, will strengthen your hamstrings. Actually, that's more strenuous than some exercises. But when they can, they should get out, look at formal exercise, work with a physical therapist, work with a trainer, a martial arts instructor. Opens up a lot of horizons, keeps them socially active, keeps them interested. The martial arts have such a great tradition and history behind them.
So it's a buddy system, finding a friend where you can encourage each other, and certainly that helps. Now, other sports. I had my parents here a couple of months ago now, and they're about 70 years old, and they're still playing tennis. What kinds of sports? If people don't like exercise for exercise sake, going on a treadmill and that kind of thing, what types of sports or other goal-directed activities, let's say, can older people do, even into advanced age?
Right, a lot of people don't like doing exercise for the sake of doing exercise. It's boring, it's not exciting, it's not fun, you don't feel like you're accomplishing a goal. If you can connect it to some sort of task or goal, or like you say, make it a social activity, do it with someone else. So if you can get to the mall or do something like that, walk with a friend, you encourage each other. There's a number of, low-impact sports. If you're capable of doing something, like bowling, anything, just getting out and being active to get off of, a kitchen chair. We want you to listen to this radio show, but when this is done, my point is you don't want to be sitting.
Well, right after this, we have Drive Time Polka coming up, so get up and find someone to do the polka with.
Your polka.
The perfect thing. Dancing.
See a lot of people doing country line dancing strictly for fitness. Very popular swing dance, I think, for a younger audience. Very, very strenuous.
Exactly. And you want to talk about improving your balance, doing a dynamic activity such as dancing where you're moving around a lot and not taking your traditional normal step over step. You're doing different sideways, forwards, back, stop, go. That's fantastic.
That is.
Balance.
Coordination improves. That will impact your balance. Absolutely.
Well, we're going to take a short break. The phone number for calls is 855-6848. We've talked about general issues in falls, fall prevention. We're going to continue on with different medical problems that can predispose you to falls and continue to talk about what very practical, simple things you can do to make sure you don't fall. We'll be right back.
Summer's down and winter's here. We had a lot of rain last year. The news is really very sad. The time is late, the fruit is
so and disappear just like the sun. The day is done. Oh, the world is falling down.
We're back now with my guests, Dr. Fred Portum and Mr. Bob White, experts in fall prevention from two different perspectives. During the break, we were talking with the station engineer, Jimmy Smith, and he had some questions about a fall his dad recently had.
That's right. He's a gardener. He loves the garden even at 89 years old. He's out in the backyard doing some gardening. He tripped over something and fell. Fortunately, it wasn't really serious, no abrasions or anything like that. But what do you do in that case when you got an active guy like him? You know, I was faced with telling my brother, watch out for him, you know, and Dad, don't go out by yourself. But is that appropriate, or what would you do?
You don't want to discourage activity.
Exactly.
But what you may want to do is, again, the education component of it, making sure that he's aware of his environment, seeing if that we can make that garden a little bit safer, if uneven stones or something like that in there. See if we can make it even. See if you can put a bench out there with arms on it,
right,
so that when he does get tired, he knows after 10 minutes, go to the bench,
that's
sit
right
down, take a little breather, and then continue with what he's doing. So just kind of implementing other strategies to make the activity a little bit safer.
And I had something to do with something I knew about when I was a kid, isometrics. Is that still a good routine?
Isometrics are very popular with athletes. Isometrics build strength in a stationary position, so the muscle's being held still when it gets stronger. Maybe a baseball catcher that's got to squat for an extended period would benefit from them. I tell my students any type of exercise is better than nothing. Your best exercises will express a muscle's range of motion. You know, while we're talking about exercise, balance is a learned behavior. We acquire balance. So maybe your dad can practice some balancing exercises, holding onto a chair or table, standing on one leg. We can improve our ability to balance with practice. That's the study done in Atlanta in 96. Anyone at any age can improve their balance. Waiting for a kettle to boil, stand on one leg for a few seconds, holding on to something, especially if he's alone, keeping it safe. You don't have to balance without holding on to something. You can keep yourself safe.
Now, let's say, Jimmy, you call your dad's doc, and your doctor... what would Fred and Bob say? What should the doctor do? And let's say the doctor really doesn't know much about assessing and giving advice on preventing falls. What is there out there? And I know WellCare has a fall prevention program mm-hmm. that you put together. There's the Tai Chi class, and maybe we can get into the specifics of how Jimmy's dad can go for an assessment to check out all the different things that might have predisposed him to falling in the garden.
Right. We talked about WellCare's fall prevention program briefly. It's an evidence-based program. So again, like we talked about earlier, looking for current literature, I put it together, and it's multidisciplinary in nature. So at WellCare, we're a certified home healthcare company, which means that if you are homebound, we can come out and see you in your home. It's covered by most insurances, either completely or with a small copayment. But it just means that it's a significant taxing effort for you to leave your
home.
Okay,
so Jimmy, you could call WellCare. And other home care companies also mm-hmm. offer services where they can go out and check a home for safety issues and also provide different services to follow up on that. So what's WoCare's number? Just so we give people a number to call.
Sure, it's 856-7500.
Okay, so
you can always call Dr. Stahl.
That's right.
And call Dr. Stahl.
My number is 636-7531, and I'll be happy to point you in the right direction also. While we're here, my email that you can reach me at is drstall, that's Dr. Stahl, at whatshouldyouexpect.com. Now, so let's say the call is made to WoCare, and an arrangement is made that you can go out to his dad's home because he's basically homebound. He really doesn't drive. He can't get anywhere on his own.
Okay.
Stays around his house, lives his life enjoyably. Then what would happen then?
Okay, so if the physician thinks that there may be a nursing need, we'll first send the nurse out there. And what he or she will be able to do is look at those medications and make sure that the patient or the person knows how to take their medications, what they're taking their medications for, how often they should be taking them, full stomach, empty stomach, you know, morning, afternoon. Make sure that they're very aware of that. Also educate them if they don't know. It's amazing the number of diabetics out there that don't know really about the disease process. So teaching the patient about what the disease is about, what their limitations are. So that would be
symptoms that might indicate low blood sugar. Or
exactly. How to take that on a regular basis.
Setting them up with a pill box if they're getting things mixed up and forgetting medications.
Exactly. So really making sure that medication, the disease process,
okay,
isn't that.
So that's the nurse. That's one member of this team approach,
sure,
to fall prevention. Then who else gets involved?
The second person that could get involved is the physical therapist. We'll send a physical therapist out there, and what they will do is really spend a lot of time on assessing the home environment and testing the person when we first see them to see kind of what their baseline is, where they are, and that'll give us a better idea as to what we really need to be focusing our treatment on.
Now, assessing a home environment would include going out into the garden, I would imagine, and looking at where the fall occurred and seeing whether there were handrails, if it was near stairs, and whether there was a handrail there for your dad to hold on to,
right,
and other aspects of home safety,
right,
the home environment.
Looking at the home, making sure there's, again, like we talked about earlier, you know, throw rugs, that there's handrails on the stairs, adaptive equipment, you know, something as simple as a reacher. For a lot of people, saves them so much time and energy. Because
it's like those old-fashioned things they used to use in grocery stores, right, to get the boxes off the top shelf.
Exactly.
I'm dating myself. I remember those, actually. I think I had one of those, too, for use in the house.
But you're getting, there's so much adaptive equipment that can make people's lives a lot less taxing and safer. That actually would be a lot more where our occupational therapists would come into play. Setting the kitchen up, you know, people of, you know, pots and pans always go on the bottom, in the bottom cupboard. Well, maybe wouldn't it be a lot easier if we put them somewhere at waist level, between waist and shoulder level? They'd be so much more accessible. Now you don't have to bend down a couple times a day to put the pots and get the pots and pans out, put them back away.
Or hang them from hooks, even outside a cupboard.
Exactly.
That might make it easier.
Exactly. So again, things that we can implement to decrease that risk, decrease your energy expenditure.
And they're called occupational therapists because I guess originally they were to help people do their occupation, and what older people are doing at home, their occupation is to live their life as comfortably and safely as possible.
Right, and the occupational therapists just try to facilitate any type of equipment or techniques or teaching that they can to keep people safe in the home independently.
Now, I have a balance assessment questionnaire that I send out to new patients ahead of time, so I get an idea of what issues they have. And this is just one of the many different self-assessment forms that I do send out ahead of time. And also, if you call me, I'd be happy to send you a patient self-assessment booklet, which has all the different assessments. And some of the questions on here: I fell or almost fell within the past year. I am afraid that I will fall. I get short of breath when I walk. I have pain when I walk. I use a cane or a walker. I take pills for sleep, depression, or anxiety. I take pills for high blood pressure. I have broken my hip.
I have tremors or Parkinson's disease. And now we get into some medical problems that people can have that make their balance or their walking ability unsteady. I have had a stroke. When I quickly move my head or roll over in bed, I feel dizzy or out of balance. Moving from a sitting to standing position makes me dizzy or lightheaded. Loud noises throw off my balance. Eating or drinking certain foods may affect my balance. And on from there. My vision gets wavy, and I feel like I should sit down at times when you stand up. And so this is a self-assessment someone can do. Now, when the physical therapist or a member of the team goes in, what can they do to assess? And there's something I believe you use. It's called the get-up-and-go test.
Right. We use two tests that are extremely reliable. The first one is the get-up-and-go test. It's a very simple test. It consists of us having our patient stand up from a seated position, walk 10 feet, turn around and sit back down. Statistically, if it takes someone longer than 30 seconds to get up from that chair, walk 10 feet, turn around and sit back down, if it takes you longer than 30 seconds, you're at risk of being a safe community dweller. From there, once we determine that's where you fit, then we'll provide the appropriate services or implement the proper treatment from there. Another test that we use is the Berg balance test. And that is a series of 14 tasks, you can say, such as getting up from a seated position, standing with your feet together, standing on one foot, turning your head over either shoulder, turning around in a circle one way, then the back of the, or the next. And we take those 14 items and we grade you on a scale of 1 to 4, and then we come out with a score at when we first see you, and then when we discharge you and feel that you're safe, and to be released from our program, we test you again. And we've had tremendous luck on the average of reducing fall by about 20-25%.
Now that get-up-and-go test, that 30 seconds would also include time someone might spend kind of rocking in a chair to get out of the chair. Often you see, you know, very nice cushiony chairs that really don't... aren't very conducive to people getting out of easily, or even there might be chairs without arms on them that someone can't push off of.
Yeah, as you know, Bob said before, you know, the best exercise for getting out of a chair is getting out of a chair. But a lot of times you go into people's homes and they have these chairs that rock, roll, swivel, twist, heat, vibrate, the whole nine yards. That may not necessarily be the safest chair for you. Your chair should be have four legs. It shouldn't be rocking and rolling. It should be steady. Ideally, it should have two arms. You shouldn't fall way back into it. It should be about a 90-degree angle when you're sitting down at your knee. If you have something that's too low, it's going to be more difficult for you to get out of it. And if it swivels, you're really putting yourself at risk because you've done it 100 times, but it just takes that one time that you go to sit back and you lose it and you end up on the floor.
Now, Bob, let's get into someone who comes in, decides Tai Chi might be something to help with their safe walking, might help with balance and coordination. Now, what do you do? Can you tell when someone first comes in how much balance they have or how much work you're going to have to do with them?
A Tai Chi instructor, a martial arts instructor, a personal trainer, a group fitness exercise leader, they shouldn't be making balance assessments or they shouldn't be dispensing medical advice. That's strictly for certified physical therapists and doctors. I find many times therapists choose Tai Chi as a transition from their programs to everyday life, so it's an excellent halfway point. So to the extent that I assess someone's balance, it's just to keep my class safe. But I'm careful never to dispense what would be considered medical advice. I'm just not trained to do that. I'm not qualified. What I do find is that many exercise programs involve seated postures. Tai Chi has a lot of walking in it, and really that's going to be the problem with people. They drive to work, or they drive the car to get to the store that's right around the corner. They sit in a chair all day. They sit at the kitchen table and do their tasks. So they're just not standing enough when they're able to. Now, I work at Mountview Nursing Home twice a month in Lockport, Tennyson Court, a number of different areas where they're non-ambulatory. I do non-ambulatory programs. Everyone's in a wheelchair. And I have them do kicking exercises, leg exercises, because the big muscles in the legs affect circulation. So if you have to stay in a seated posture to exercise, again, I tell people exercise rather than not. But if you can engage in an activity like Tai Chi that has a lot of walking, a lot of times exercises are task-specific. To improve your balance walking, walk. Just walking around your block improves balance. Walk slowly. Walk with a conscious effort. Strike the ground with your heel first. That's a big issue. Many of us walk flat-footed. When the heel strikes the ground first, we keep our weight on our supporting leg. So if we do step on ice, we're less likely to go down. That's a big productive element in Tai Chi classes. It's called the heel strike. We should naturally walk that way. It's easier to walk with flat feet, so many people do that.
Right, I find a lot of people shuffling their feet, and what the problem right. there is when you come up to an uneven surface, either in your home or on a sidewalk, if you're shuffling your feet, your foot's going to get caught up on that, and unfortunately,
you've forgotten how to take a proper step up.
Exactly.
Right. Now, describe Tai Chi. Let's say I come in, or let's say Jimmy's dad comes in, okay, and he's new to the program. What does he face? Is it a scary situation?
No, not at all.
I'm sure you're not a scary looking guy, so I'm sure. So I'm sure you welcome people, and people feel comfortable getting. They might be a little anxious, not knowing what to expect. But then, give a quick overview of what Tai Chi is, what it looks like.
And Tai Chi is a martial art that was developed by a gentleman named Chen in the mid 1600s, and he made it as a fitness routine based on fighting arts. Quickly, if you were going to put an exercise routine together today, you'd use yoga, you'd use Pilates, you'd take the ingredients that exist in your contemporary times. Well, in Chen Wangting's time, the people that exercised were fighters, so it's classified as a martial art. His primary goal was wellness and health. So you got a guy in his 70s that takes fighting routines and develops them into a series of exercises. About 100 years later, another gentleman slows them down, primarily to make them calming and relaxing. So in a group environment, sometimes we're nervous, as you said, we're apprehensive. You'll find the class is very, very relaxing. The movements are soft, gentle, and flowing. Everyone can do them. Often my students remark that it looks easy until they actually try it, and when the workout is done, they find it was more strenuous than they expected, but they also find it invigorating. I've done a number of health fairs for corporations. One's a plant in Tonawanda. It's called Unifrax, and they'll send me in the morning. I'll catch workers that have been on an assembly line for 16 hours straight. They're cooked. They earn, they're tired is what I mean to say, they're fatigued. They earn credit for attending my workshop. So I'll tell them, I know what it's like to work that hard. I've had a variety of jobs in my lifetime. If you'll just do this half hour with me, you'll feel better. And they absolutely do. They feel refreshed and invigorated after a half hour of the stretching and the movements of Tai Chi. I'm very, very customer-oriented, student-oriented, so I try to make it as pleasant an environment as possible because they're unique movements. We're not used to doing them.
Now, how do people get in touch with you, or how do they get into Tai Chi? If for some reason they can't go to your class, what opportunities are there for Tai Chi in the Buffalo area?
Call your look in your yellow pages under karate schools and try them first. Even though it seems intimidating, most of the karate schools offer classes geared towards seniors. Try your Y. Try your community center. My programs are run through the McLaughlin Center of DeGraff Hospital. And let me give you the number there. It's 690-2271. Ask for Phyllis. Insurance will cover. Blue Cross will give you one free session, an 8-week session for free. Again, it's 690-2271. If you can't make it to the Kaleida classes through DeGraff, the Y, the community center, the senior center, ask your friends. Chances are somebody's done it somewhere. It's very, very popular nowadays.
Let's shift gears just a little bit because time's running short, and I did want to get this in. And this is another cause of what might, another reason people might walk unsteadily or feel dizzy, and that's our vestibular system. This is in the ear, in the inner ear. And I've successfully sent patients of mine to vestibular therapists who essentially help clear the sludge out of the inner ear. And Fred and I were talking beforehand that we have epidemic, my experience is an epidemic of tons of earwax in people's ears that are likely affecting hearing, and significantly so in a large number of people. But then another part of the ear, the inner ear, has sludge in it too. That can affect balance. And Fred, do you want to talk about vestibular therapy and how often it occurs, if you have that number, and what can be done about that?
Right. One of the another reason why people can fall is again their vestibular system, that inner ear. Essentially, what happens is there's a loose body floating in your inner ear that really sends messages to the brain. If you feel that when you change directions, the room is spinning around you, or you're spinning. In a room, some people get very ill from it, that you can't even move because you get sickened and it feels like the room is spinning. That's a very clear sign that you may have an inner ear or a vestibular problem. What can be done is if you think that you have this, you can contact your physician and they can send you to a certified vestibular specialized physical therapist. Most physical therapists are trained in this, but I would recommend going to someone who has a separate certification for it, because it is a specialty and it is involved. But what generally happens is you can physical therapist can do a maneuver to you that essentially takes this loose body, and by turning your head and changing your position in a rather quick method, can get that loose body back to where it needs to be.
And this loose body is very small.
Yes, it's nothing that you can, it's nothing substantial. It's tiny, but with the right maneuver, it can be fixed. And I've had people who have gone to see a vestibular therapist. They've had this maneuver done once, and all of a sudden they can't believe it, because all of a sudden they're free. They don't have that dizziness. They're not sick. And they just getting off that table, they're free to carry on their lives. And I think you have.
Yeah, that's. I just want to get that in, because it really wasn't something that I was very familiar with, even through my geriatric training. And I became aware of it through a physical therapist named Joan Gunther, who happened to be expert in this. She's with Damon College. Her phone number is 839-8554. There are other. Experts, and I'll just give two other numbers. Athleticare has experts, at least at the Mercy Ambulatory Center, and a number you can reach them there is 662-0500. And there's a woman, Susan Bennett, who's also has a doctorate degree, a PhD degree, a physical therapist. And she's affiliated with the Kaleida system, and she could be reached in the rehab department at DeGrasse, 690-2031. So that's another option that I think people should take into account, and it's not very well known. The disorder is called BPPV, benign paroxysmal positional vertigo.
Very good. Yeah.
Thank you. I practiced all day today. I practiced that one. I feel it's important, because in my limited experience with sending a few patients to a vestibular therapist, the percentage that it helped was very high. And I suspect that there might even be an epidemic of BPPV out there.
Right.
And it could help a lot of people.
You know, when people fall, a lot of people think strength right away, but again, we have to consider all the other components, the environment, the medications, and this BPPV.
Vision affects balance, regular eye exams.
Vision, even hearing.
Hearing, we hear sounds bouncing off the environment around us to give us a sense of place.
And then sensory problems. If you're diabetic and you have numbness in your feet, that's going to affect your balance as well. Any closing thoughts, any additional resources people can touch base with, look up on the web that come to mind that might help?
Someone who doesn't have a son like Jimmy to help them. Maybe they need a handrail installed. Where can people go for a handyman they can trust? Reluctant to have someone. Can you think of anything offhand? Or that would be something interesting to post. Have things done around the house. Have carpets tacked down. Maybe somebody living alone.
There are handyman services. I don't have their numbers offhand. I think most of the home care agencies would be able to point you in the right direction with regard to that.
We work with a couple people.
Any other martial arts, unusual types of therapy that you're aware of that has helped people with fall prevention? Anything you want to say about assistive devices like canes and wheeled walkers and quad canes and that sort of thing? We really didn't talk about that at all.
Yeah, there's they help people tremendously. My only caution with assistive devices is that if you use one, make sure it's appropriate for you. So many times I go to someone who's borrowing a cane or borrowing a walker or borrowing something from
like
someone.
Borrowing hearing aids and things like that.
Exactly. If the device is not sized for you, you can be putting yourself at a lot of risk. If a cane's much too short and you're bending over, you think that you're doing yourself a favor. You're actually not. So just make sure that it's fit appropriately for you and that you've been educated on how to use the device.
So I think, to sum up, it seems like every older person certainly should be exercising, and you can do it in your own home with the going up on tippy toes, doing reaches when you're at the sink,
squats,
getting out of the chair. So, you know, if you have a fear of falling and you're not trying to get up and do things, it's counterproductive. If you also have that fear, or if you've fallen, it's essential, important, and essential to tell your doctor about it, to mention it to your pharmacist as well, if you're on medications, especially medications, heart medications, medications for sleep and mood, if you're taking over-the-counter medications. Cold remedies are notorious for causing problems like dizziness or tiredness, confusion, weakness, things like that. The basic home safety measures and a home safety assessment you can find on the web at the radio show's website. I'd be happy to send it to you also. And getting in for a proper evaluation to sort out what's causing your problems with walking, whether it's balance, whether it's just your walking is unstable for some reason. And along with preventive things to do, if you're a mall walker, great. But it sounds like anyone could benefit from Tai Chi to get into a program like Tai Chi that both works on strength but also works on balance as critical components, two critical components of what you need to do to be able to walk and stay upright safely.
And it's a great way to make friends and expand your social network.
And to get in there, maybe you have to team up with a buddy. You got to drag someone in there, or you drag each other in there. But you got to decide for yourself, this is important to me. And why is it important? Because if you fall, there's a high chance that you'll get injured, often very seriously. If you fall once, you have a high chance of falling again. And also, falls are a major reason why people end up in nursing homes, right, and places other than their usual home. So there's a lot of reasons that someone would want to take falls and prevention of falls very seriously.
Right, you don't want to be thinking about this after the fact. You really want to encourage people to take a proactive approach. No one knows your body better than you, so if you feel that something's not right, advocate for yourself, talk to your physician, your pharmacist, exactly, and work on that.
Well, thanks so much, guys. I better wrap up. As Ron Dombrowski's will be here momentarily for Drive Time Polka. Thanks so much, Fred. Fred Portum, Director of Rehab with Woolcare, and Bob White, an expert in karate, martial arts, and Tai Chi especially. It's great information for people today.
Thank
Next month's show, you're very welcome. Next month's show, the first Monday of December, December 6th, I'll have with me Dr. Jim Marshall of Roswell Park Cancer Institute, and he's an expert in cancer prevention. That will be the topic next month, and this is Dr. Rob Stahl. I'll see you next week.
Dr. Stahl, just before you leave, you need Fred, Bob, and Rob's telephone numbers, just in case. I'm sure there's hundreds out there listening.
Okay, let's do that again. Dr. Stahl, my number is 636-7531, or by email, drstall@whatshouldyouexpect.com. The website of the show, whatshouldyouexpect.com. Dr. Fred?
My number at WillCare is 856-7500, and my email is fportum, P-O-R-D-U-M, at WillCare.
And Bob?
And at my Martial Arts Academy, the number is 866-9757, 866-9757. Call me anytime.
And there you have it. I hope that helps, and I hope you stay happy, healthy, and on your feet.